session number 10734, Reel 1.
Mr. Remington, Reel 1. When was it that you joined the Navy, Mr. Remington?
I joined it April 1938.
Why did you join up?
Well, I lived in out in the country and I didn't want to work. It was all farm work and I didn't want to work on the farm, and so I was really interested in the Navy to go into it.
Where do you come from?
Well, I lived out in the Fens in Ramsey in Huntingdonshire. Right out in the wilds. And there was only farm work. I wasn't interested in farm work at all.
What was your initial training like?
I was a Ganges boy at Shotley, and it was fairly hard. A lot of people didn't like it. The discipline was very strict. No runs ashore and nothing. So, but I didn't mind it. I didn't mind my training.
Were you treated harshly?
Probably I was lucky, because some of the instructors in Shotley was really, really hard men, but I struck it lucky. I had two or three different instructors, and I was probably lucky, and my instructors didn't treat us too bad at all. But some boys was really treated hard, and some boys, they hated the Navy. They used to run away on that, but the discipline, it was really, really strict. The discipline was really strict there.
Why were they treated harshly? Were they picked on or not?
I think if you behaved yourself, you was left alone. But if you kicked against the system, they got onto you. They really knuckled down onto you.
Were you punished yourself?
No, I behaved myself.
What branch of the Navy did you go into?
Well, from a boy seaman, I went in the torpedo branch. I was a torpedo man.
When did you become a torpedo?
That was, I qualified in the Actian in 1940. I was in the Actian. The Actian was in Chatham Barracks, the torpedo school in Chatham.
Was that before or after Narvik?
That was after Narvik, because I was a boy. You didn't get a torpedo rate or a gunnery rate until you was an able seaman, and I was a boy at Narvik.
When you heard that we were at war with Germany, how did you react to that?
Well, I think we had a scare in 1938 when I was at Shotley, and we've looked forward to it. I think that's what we was trained for. If there hadn't been a war, I don't think I'd have enjoyed the Navy, because we went in the Navy for a war, I think. But I couldn't understand these days. These people have never, the new Navy, never heard, most of them never heard an angry shot. Well, I think we was trained for fighting, and that's what we wanted to do. Because Lady Astor tried to bring boys, when the war started, she wanted to bring, she was the MP down at Devonport, she wanted to bring the boys off the ships. And there was elder play on the ships. The boys, we didn't want to leave. We was at sea. We didn't want to come ashore. And it didn't come out. It didn't come out anyway. We did. I think she stopped them from going on destroyers, but we was all on battleships and cruisers as the boys.
So she didn't make herself very popular with the boys.
No, I don't think she was. No.
When did you join the war spout?
I joined a week before the war started. We was shipped from Chatham Barracks by train down to we went over to Dieppe, New Haven to Dieppe, and then over France to Marseille, and picked up HMS Sussex in Marseille, and that took us to Alexandria. So we arrived in Alexandria the Sunday before the war started, on the following Sunday.
What kind of a ship was she to serve on?
The war spout. The best one I was on, I had about 11 ships, and that was the best one, because it was all peacetime crew, and it was a real good ship, one of my best.
What was so good about it, though?
Well, probably the comradeship, mates, I had good mates on there. chaps that I'd been with from Shotley. I'd been with the same chaps from Shotley.
Because some people say they don't like big ships, because you get lost on them.
Well, the big ships was strict routine. So you, if you can stand discipline and you don't kick against the system, you're all right. But if you once they start kicking against the system, and then that's when things start going against people. But I was a Shotley boy and well trained, and I didn't mind discipline. I had three big ships. After I left the war spot, I went to the Resolution, and then I wasn't on the Resolution very long. Then I went to HMS Hanson, brand new battleship, KG5 class, and I had about 18 months on there. So I had three battleships from when I first joined the Navy.
Did you get many people who reacted against discipline?
No, very few. No, there wasn't many that kicked against it, but you get it in all life. You get skates, what we call skates, and they was really hard cases.
What is a skate?
Well, he's one who kicks against discipline that wouldn't knuckle under. You don't want to knuckle under the discipline.
Is this a Navy word?
Genji's word, Shotley word, yeah, skate. A skate in the Navy was an hard case.
What did you think of the officers that you served with on the Wasp Fight?
They was all like old time officers. They was pretty good. The boys officer, the boys divisional officer, he was a good fella, and we had good commander. Captain Crutchley was the first captain of the Wasp Fight when I was at Narvik. VC man, he was a nice fella. I didn't run into any bad officers. I'd done a fair time in the Navy, and I don't think I run into any real bad officers. They looked after us.
Can you tell me how Warspite came to be involved at Narvik, starting from the beginning and going through it steadily, stage by stage in detail?
Well, we was sent home from the Mediterranean to take a big convoy to collect a big convoy from Halifax and bring it over to England. Then the Norwegian campaign started. So most of the Home Fleet was sent to Norway, take the troops over, and we was off Norway when the destroyers went in the first battle. We was at the second battle of Narvik. The first battle of Narvik, the destroyers went in and got real bashed up. We lost the Ardy and two or three destroyers. They thought there was only a couple of destroyers in there. Instead of that, there was eight destroyers waiting for the first battle of Narvik. So what got out, then the Admiralty said, I think Churchill was the big noise of the Admiralty. Then he said he'd send a battleship in there. So they said they sent the Warswick. They said they'd send the Warswick in. So the night before a battleship, the flagship came alongside, or came near us, and we took the Admiral Whitworth. We took Admiral Whitworth on board the night before, and that's when they told us that they was going to send the Warspite in to see if we could get these destroyers out. So that night we was all getting tensed up, and the boys' instructor, he said we all had to have a good scrub up and put clean clothes on and clean overalls ready for the next day. And then we went in the morning. We went in. It must have been in the afternoon, about 1 o'clock time. We went into the field itself, and then they stand up action stations, and we all rushed to our action stations, and we knew we was in something good, because there was three destroyers in front of us and three either side. So that was nine destroyers going in, escort us in there. And then our aeroplane was up and spotted a submarine in the field, and they had to go. They sunk that before, otherwise she was waiting to fire torpedoes. But the destroyers fired at us torpedoes, but they all missed. But we could hear them exploding because they was hitting the sides of the field. And then they opened fire. But I was an X turret, and it was A turret and B turret. The two forward turrets was getting all the work, see, because we couldn't see them. All you could hear an X turret was the old turret trainer saying the X turret won't bear, so we couldn't get a shot up at all from X turret, but A turret and B turret was firing all the time, and they hit eight destroyers between them with the destroyers. The destroyers took a bit of a packet because they was firing shrapnel shells over them, and they was open guns, a lot of them destroyers them days. They had open guns, no turrets, but we was all right in the turrets. We only got about one bit of shrapnel in the ship while we was in there, but the destroyers took a bit of a pounding. And then when we got right into almost to Narvik itself, and the destroyers was all finished, the Eskimo went in to route a ship up. One was alongside in Narvik itself, and they said it had the white flag up. So the Eskimo went inside, and as soon as she put her nose in the breakwater, they fired torpedoes at her and blew her bows off. So they brought her alongside. The Eskimo come alongside us, and the Cossack was messed up really bad. So she came alongside, and we brought all the wounded off and the dead off the destroyers on the war spite. So the boys' mess deck was on the sick bay level. So they cleared all the boys, all our messes were all cleared out, and they took all our hammocks and laid them all down, and they put all the wounded in the boys' mess deck on our hammocks and took all our bedding. And then that night we went out and buried the people that got killed. We went out and buried them outside of Narvik that evening, and then we stopped around there 2 or 3 days, and then they thought they'd have another bombardment. So we went back 2 days afterwards and had a real good bombardment there. And then I think old Crutchley took a bit of pity on us, and the X turret and Y turret hadn't fired a lot of shells, so we turned around, and so X turret and Y turret had a good go at firing turrets, so we did get a few shells away, but A and B turret, they fired the most.
What was your actual job in the turret?
I used to work the X turret was a control turret. If the main director and the after director got washed out, X turret had a rangefinder in it, and that was to take control of all the guns, all the 15 inch guns, if those two directors was washed out. So we had an officer in the turret, a control officer in the turret, and I used to work a range and numeric clock to give the range and inclination of the target if we was took over the control of the main armament. I was in the cabinet's crew. There was two or three boys in the cabinet had different the boys was communication numbers communication numbers, and we worked different little instruments as boys.
Who was in charge of X turret?
Names have gone. The GI that we had. I should have wrote them down. And the officers that we had an officer in the turret. No, but his name's gone.
But these were 15-inch guns.
Yes.
X-turret. What was it like in the turrets during the action?
Well, at Narvik, we only fired. We fired salvos. That's one turret at one gun at a time firing. So. But it really shakes you up when the 15-inch turret, that you can't explain the end of the world coming. There's a real you get a real big explosion and a terrible lot of vibration.
Does it damage your eardrums?
We didn't wear the probably we should have done, because I've had ear trouble since. But a lot of people got their eardrums messed up. But I've got the old noisy ears, and that must have been because of because of gunfire. A lot of people had their eardrums pierced and that, because it was really noisy.
You mean you suffer from tinnitus?
Yes.
And you think that maybe because
It was something to do with it, a lot to do with it, I think.
When you did the bombardment, did that go efficiently?
Yeah, I was for bombard in the Mediterranean. That was after Narvik. We went back to
when you did the bombardment.
Oh yes, we was just firing at old. If anybody moved, you could see troops walking around. They just used to fire at anything, and we fired at a shed that got dynamite on it and stuff like that. They thought they'd frighten them away, same as they could land in Norway again. But it didn't do any good at all. We had to get out.
How frightening was the Second Battle of Narvik for you? Were you?
I think we was hyped up, and we was looking forward to it. It was. We'd never been in action before. That's the first time the war spirit had fired in anger since Jutland, when she went into Narvik. That's the first angry shots she fired. She fired a good many afterwards.
Was the war spirit hit at all during the second battle?
No. Well, I had the other boy next to it. When we had air raids, we used to have to man the communications on the. We had 0.5 guns on top of extra AA guns, and we used to have to man those for air action. And the airplanes came over, and he was on the turret, and he got a bit of shrapnel in his arm or his fingers, and he was the only man who was touched on war spider. But I think we had a young fella in B turret, or a boy in A turret, got his finger in a bogey wheel when he was loading shells. So I think there was only two people that was really went to the sick bay after Narvik. So he was really lucky.
You talked about taking the wounded on board from the Cossack
destroyers. Yes,
from the destroyers. What kind of impression did they make on you? Were they badly wounded?
Yes, they was in a bad state. Lots of them was in a bad state. I don't know how many we buried, but we went to see. We stopped and had burial services at nights all the way back to Scapa. You know, when people was dying on the way back, there was. The shrapnel done a lot of them, but the main damage, there was a lot on the Eskimo was really hurt because the bales were blown off. So the two forward guns was blown away, and there was boys on the Eskimo was the tribal class destroyer, see, and they was the first destroyers that had boys mess decks. So there was the boys really took a pasting on the Eskimo, and there was shell shock from them and all. There was a young boy that was a Shotley boy with me, and he was really shouting. He couldn't talk low because I suppose his eardrums had gone. He was in shock. There was lots in shock. There's quite a few really hurt at Narvik.
Were you able to have any conversation with any of the wounded?
No, I don't know. No, they was on. No, I don't. Don't think we did. No, they was in the sick bay, and that was it.
How did you feel when the Warspite returned to Britain after Narvik?
Well, I think we was hoping to go. We was going to one day ever walk around London, because the Ajax, the Battle of Plate was just before that, and they all marched through London. So when we was coming home, it was. It was a Guildhall or Saddle, and we got Saddle because we went into Greenock, an ammunition ship, and that night they sent us to the Med again, so we didn't even see England. We ended up out in the Mediterranean again.
Did that cause any bad feeling?
No, well, a lot of the people that had been on there, the commission that I joined it, that they went off at Greenock. And we lost Captain Crushley at Greenock. He went ashore, and he was crying when he left the ship, because he was a real warship man, and we left him in. He went off in Greenock, and then a Fisher come on. Captain Fisher, his father was an admiral in the First World War. Captain Fisher took over, and that night. In Greenock ammunition ship when a French destroyer blew itself up. It fired a torpedo into its superstructure. There's a big accident on there, and we was almost alongside that, with the ammunition laying all over the upper deck like cordite and shells. So we had to up anchor quick and get away from it, because I should have wrote names down. It went down in Greenock that night, and then we sailed that night to the Med.
So this was just an accident to the French?
Yes.
When were you first in action in the Mediterranean with the Warspite then?
Well, that would be when the Italians came in. Yes, we hadn't been out there long. But we went to see the day the Italians came in, and we had a go at a battleship. We hit a Italian battleship at about 25-mile range. They run, you know, that's with the first action. Then, but we'd done a done a fair amount of bombarding because the army was going up and down the North African coast like a yo-yo. We'd be up in Tobruk one day and back in. So we bombarded all Bardia and all those. But I had a different job then. I wasn't in the turret when I went back to the Med. I was in the 15-inch TS, and I used to be. I was a boy, still a boy. So I was the officer's messenger in the 15-inch TS, and I used to have to put. We had spotters, aircraft spotters, and I used to have to cross, put the cross on the charts where the 15-inch shells was landing, you know, so they knew what the damage they was doing in the Fort Capuzzo and Bardia. We'd done quite a lot of bombardments.
What does TS mean?
Transmitting station. That's the computer that looks after the 15-inch guns. It's the mechanical computers right in the bows of the ship.
Can you tell me more about hitting this battleship, this Italian?
No, that was just run away, and that was it. We hit it, and that was it. They was coming to attack a convoy, I think, and they just turned tail and ran.
You told me that you were at Matapan.
Yes, that was an evening. That was one evening do. One, yeah.
Can you tell me what job you were doing there?
I was in the 15-inch. I was in X turret then. I was in X turret. Probably Matapan was before we'd done the bombardments. But I was still in the control cabinet in X turret. That's the first time we fired broadsides. We was really waiting for this night. We was going to fire broad. You know, the time we'd fire broadsides because at night action it was night action. But 9 or 10 o'clock at night probably, and these two cruisers. They spotted these two cruisers, and they didn't even see us. So I think when we was hitting them, the turrets were still trained four and a half. So they didn't stand a chance. These two cruisers, and we fired broadsides at them, and that was when you think the turret's going to lift outside out of the ship. That you can't explain that. I don't think not the vibration and the noise of a 15-inch broadside. That's all 8 guns firing at the same time. The ship listed over. You used to list the ship over, but you didn't fire. You didn't fire many of those. Then you went on to salvos again. But these was very little firing really, because the two cruisers went down.
How is a salvo different from
a salvo? Is one barrel firing at a time. Broadside is both barrels firing at together, and then you go to salvos. Same as you got instead of having say a minute and a half waiting between bangs between shells going, they're going half that time, like 60 seconds, 30 seconds. So it seems more firepower from a salvos than there does when there's broadsides.
Where is the TS?
The TS is right in the bottom of the ship, right in the under the armoured belting, right down the bottom of the ship. That was manned. The Royal Marine Band always done the TSs, looked after. That was their job. There was just two boys in there, and the rest was Royal Marine Bandsmen. They was always the TSs crews on the HA, because the 4-inch guns had a TS as well. So they looked after all the TSs.
And so you were plotting on a chart.
Yeah.
How did you plot on the chart?
Just across where the shell fell. It was just a big chart of the coast and the town, and wherever they said marked as, you know, what A's and 6's, and you just put across where you, so that you knew where your 15-inch shells was landing. And then the control officer in the TS could tell the turret or the director there whether to fire the shells, you know, at the range more or left or right. And then he could pinpoint the target.
Who's giving you your orders in the transmitting?
There was a warrant gunnery officer. He's a GI, the first branch of the gunnery officer. There was quite a few of them in the Navy. There was GI's been, or gunnery instructor's been made up into warrant officers. It was the first rank, the warrant officers in the Navy in them days. There was elderly gunnery officers, but the main gunnery officer would be in the director, in the main director in the top of the ship.
So you were below decks the whole
time?
Oh,
yes,
in
the TS,
the Matapan battle.
No, Matapan, I was in the turret. It was the bombardments I was in. I was in the TSs.
What could you see during
nothing,
the battle?
Nothing. No, in the turrets you couldn't do all your... There was an officer on the bridge that would be telling everybody what was happening. You wasn't left in the dark. If it was possible, they always would let you know what was happening, because very few people could see what was happening, because the 6 inches was all, 6 inch guns was all enclosed. The only guns open was the pom poms and the 4 inch or 4.5. So very few people could see actions. You know, most of us was all shut down underneath. And the engine room and boiler room was worse, because they had loudspeakers, but it was noise down there, so they wouldn't, you know, they was in the dark all the time, didn't know what was happening hardly all the time.
Were you involved with the crisis in Greece and Crete?
Yes, Crete. We went to see. We took the army to Greece, or escorted the convoys, and then we went to get them back from when they evacuated Greece and went to Crete. We went to try and get them back, and that's when all the damage was done. We lost a lot of ships at Crete, and the worst boat was it at Crete with a 500-pound gun, 500-pound shell. Bomb. We dive bombers got us at Crete, and that was the 22nd of May. That was the end of us. We went back to Alexandria, and then we went out to the Mediterranean. Went out to America to be dished up.
Were you still doing the same job in the turret?
I was in the TS when we got it at Crete, and then that was a bit scary, because all the dynamos went off the board. There was no lights or nothing on the ship for it all. But we had emergency lights then in the TS, but only like candles, so that was a little bit scary, because that 500-pound bomb really rocked the horse fight. Really, we knew we'd been hit.
What did the damage look like?
Well, it washed out all the 6-inch batteries on the starboard side, and it blew a 4-5 gun over the side, one of the AA guns. So, and it messed up all the pom poms on the starboard side. So we could fire the 15-inch still, but the ship was in a bit of a state.
Were there many casualties?
The book says 34 was killed. There was a lot injured, but we always thought it was 60 killed, but the history book says 34 was killed. So it was probably 34 killed and 60 or 70 was really injured.
Did you know any of the casualties?
I lost two mates. Boys messed it. We lost some boys on the wars, right? And then the Marines always manned the starboard battery, so the Marines lost it. They lost a lot of Marines. And we lost... the gun's crew was killed. On the 4-inch gun's crew, they was all killed. But I lost some good mates on the Warsword at Crete, boys that had been with me at Shotley. I'd been with them 2 or 3 years.
Then you had to leave the Mediterranean to...
Yes, we took her to Bremerton Navy Yard in America, Bremerton, near Seattle. It's the Navy Yard on the west coast of America. We took her out there to be dished up, and that's where I left the war spot.
So you left the Warspite in America?
Yes, yeah, and we came over by train. We had 4 days in the train from Seattle to Philadelphia, and I joined the Resolution in Philadelphia. She'd been hit at Madagascar. She'd been torpedoed, so she was being repaired on the other coast, and she'd just been repaired, so we brought her back to England, the Resolution.
Which year was this?
1941. That'd be the August 1941.
Was Resolution very much different from the Warspite?
Well,